Small dots. Take the other sheet. Okay, this week's parsha, parsha's Kisavo. So we have the brachos and the klalos. We keep the Torah, Hashem promises as many blessings, God forbid. If we don't, there's a very long list of curses. So we talk about the blessings, so it says in the Chumash, Baruch Atav Ha'ir, Baruch Atav Ha'Sodeh, Baruch Ri Vitznacha, Baruch Tanacha U'Mishatecha, Baruch Atav Ha'Va'echa, Baruch Atav Ha'Tzeisecha. Yitin Hashem Esadecha Kam Alecha Nigafa Mepanecha, Yitzav Hashem Yitzvah Sadracha Ba'Samecha V'Chol Mishach Yitzecha, Yitim Hashem Lo La'am Kodah. So he used that a few words, but basically this is the structure and what he wants to focus on. Look at it, you see. But it's a very slow, it's a strange thing here. First it begins basically with six lashonos of blessing. Baruch Atah V'ir 1, Baruch Atah V'Sodah 2, Baruch T'Fitnacha 3, Baruch Tanacha M'Sha'atecha 4, Baruch Atah V'Recha, Baruch Atah V'Tzeshecha. You have four, you have six lashonos of bracha. You get six statements of blessing. And then, after that, it says, Yitain Hashem, Esayzech HaKam Lech Negam L'Fanecha, God will make your enemies be defeated. And then, Tzav Hashem Itcha, Esabrocha Basanechu B'chol Mishachanecha, God will give a blessing into your granaries and in everything you do. And then, Kim Kashem Lo La'am Kadosh, God will give you, make you a holy nation. So if you look at the structure here, there's a question, why after the six blessings does it come in with the destruction of Jewish enemies, and then come back to a seventh blessing? And finally finish off, it will become a holy nation. So just to try to understand the structure of the brachos in the parasha of Kisavo, is what the Shem Yishmo wants to do. So he says, he made Kasuv Sheish Pa'amim Baruch. You have the word Baruch six times at the beginning. Hainu Shechoshei Rachos Tratio. These are very specific blessings. Binyanim Nishalchim, various things, right? Ve'ir, Basadeh, Tri Ditnacha, your children, Tanacha Mishatacha, your food, the Ve'echa, you're coming, Basashecha, you're going. So these very specific activities, which we do, are done with a blessing. Then, after that, there's an, all of a sudden, a destruction or defeat of enemies. And then after that, there's a general blessing which says, you'll be blessed, whatever you do. It's very interesting. You have to understand, why did the Torah interrupt the list of blessings with the destruction of enemies? Why didn't it write all seven blessings together? The nearest, he wants to explain like this. The six blessings are parallel to the 6 days of the week. Who practice in Atzma. Every day of the week is a separate entity. We also know in the Kabbalah that every day represents one of the six basic midos, the bulk in Hashem is God's name. So, Chesed, Kavua, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yisod. You know the six, and then Malchus is the seven. So, the six traits of the six heroes on the 6 days of the week. Sunday is Chesed, Monday is Kavua, Tuesday is Tiferet, Wednesday Netzach, Thursday Hod, Friday is Yisod. So he has six blessings, 6 days, six very special traits of Hashem. Bracha Shvi is the seventh blessing, which we have here, Shehi Kolelet, which is a general blessing. Da'av bless you b'chol mishnach nedecho, hilu mas yom Shabbos. This is a parallel to Shabbos. Shukolo hakol. Shabbos includes within it all the week. Shabbos has everything of the week. Goes into Shabbos and comes out of Shabbos. Shabbos is a bracha of klal. It's a concept of a universal concept. Zel, and that's why I said the Samacha, right after the seventh blessing, which is a general blessing, an all-inclusive blessing, universal, then it says, Yikim Hashem lo la'am kadosh, to become a holy nation. The Yadua, the Shabbos, Nikreis Nachas Yaakov. We know that Shabbos is called the inheritance of Yaakov. And it says, Yigdisho es kadosh Yaakov. And kadosh Yaakov means God is called also the kadosh of Yaakov. So I came there for HaBracha HaShvi is the seventh blessing called Leles, which is a general one. Meshechus Ima Kedusha. It brings with it holiness. Ba'asheh En Yana the Kedusha Shabbos. Since it's the concept of it is the holiness of Shabbos. Okay, it's a very deep Kabbalistic or Hasidic idea that a Bracha called Leles, you have everything that needs to have Kedusha. It means you're very close to Hashem, because Hashem is Kadosh, and He makes you Kadosh. So the ultimate goal is to become Am Kadosh, which is after everything is achieved, in terms of tikkun and fixing, getting things in the right balance, so on, midos, mitzvos. So you have Kedusha, so the shleimus brings the Kedusha. So the work 6 days of the week, to fix, to get things ready, to be making. I come to Shabbos, which is Kolelos, which includes everything. And Shabbos is Kodesh. And Kodesh is Shabbos. So Kral Man, who said in Mokam Achim, someplace else, Shalashon, Vayechulu Hashemayim Va'olet, the Chol Tzavon. What is with Vayechulu? The sky, the world was completed. Hainu Shanasa Kulam Klal, V'hamonia Achash. In the word Vayechulu, you can read into the word Vayechulu, which literally means to finish, start finish, but also means klal, He made it complete. The world became complete. Everything became what He called it. I don't know if there's a Hebrew word, harmonia, but I know I got into the word Shemesh Shmuel, but apparently he knows the word harmony. Became one harmony, the whole world. Must be a Greek word, so it must come from the Gemara, because it wouldn't take a word in the Gemara. Okay. So Tachas Asher B'Seishas Yimei Hamasa, instead of the 6 days of activity, which Hayu Tratim Tratim of Nashman, the 6 days of activity are basically separate things. There's a lot of disharmony during the 6 days of the week, a lot of cacophony, a lot of things, I'm being pulled this way, I do this, I do that. Things are clashing all the time during the week. I have different pulls, I have to do to learn, and I have to do my math, and I have to write a paper, and I have to take care of my parents, and I have to go shopping, and I have to do the laundry, and I have so many things. Everything might be important, but there's no harmony between everything. It's because trusty, things are separated. Shabbat, Yom HaNishmasa. Shabbos is a day of the soul. Nishmas Habir, the soul of all of creation. The Kemosha Neshama Sheba Adam, like the soul of a person, Sha'al Yadah Nafshim Kolo Eberim, Kulim Zeh Bezeh. The soul makes all the different parts of the person a unit. Kein Al Yadei HaShabbos, same way Shabbos, Yehi Nishmas Habum, it's the soul of all of creation. Na'aseh Kol Habiyah Kula, the whole world becomes one entity, integrated whole. Bezeh Shabbos, Roza Dech. That's why we say Shabbos is the secret of one. Very interesting point. Very interesting concept. That Shabbos is a neshama of the world. It's a neshama, means it's the source of life, and he interprets in this case, it's the source of the unity within the world. In other words, even though the world, as I experienced it during the 6 days, seems to be very disunited. Pulling here, pulling there, clashes, explosions, whatever that's going on. However, Shabbos comes along, then all the world is unified. It's because Shabbos is the neshama of the world. So it's like the neshama unifies every part of the body. In other words, sure, my legs are my legs, and my hands, and eyes, and ears, and nose, everything is different. But I still have that sense that deep, deep down, everything is one within me. Everything is me, even though it's different. So when you focus on the neshama, there's a unity which comes to the forefront. So the same thing, once a week, actually, Shabbos is a neshama, but neshama is a concept of cloud, of integrated wholeness. Refuse there, okay, now he explains. Now, so this was a very nice Hasidic philosophy. Refuse there, based upon all of the four, what comes first, Yeshi came tam al mitzuach ha'oizim. Now we can explain why the destruction of enemies comes, shemafsik. That's an interruption between the sixth and the seventh blessing. Because we said there were six blessings which were specific, and the seventh was a cloud. And the interruption between the sixth and seventh is the defeat of enemies. It says in Pirkei Avos that in the end of the sixth day, it was already Bein HaShemashah, it's almost Shabbos, it's between Friday and Shabbos. Sunset, the stars didn't come out yet. So God created a few things, tail end creations. One which was mazikim, things which caused trouble in the world. Now, because Shabbos came in, God never finished creating them, like incomplete creatures. That's what it says. The Chazal. Hello, Kodesh Baruch Hu Yadam Rosh Benef Tikas Man Megram Ram Achi Kadesh Hayom. God knew that he wouldn't finish it before Shabbos comes. Lomel Hishol Ben Mekodim. Why didn't he make them earlier and finish the job? The Midrash says, Yesh Tam. There's a reason. Lamed Ba'odim Shasik Malachim. Tell a person, even in the middle of a job, he should stop for Shabbos. He could lose his job, but the Rebbe, his father, said, another good reason. Really, a blessing comes on something which is complete or perfect. It can't come something which is incomplete and blemished. I came there for Birchas Shabbos. The Brach of Shabbos color comes when the creation is completed. Once the world is completed, it gets bracha, a blessing. If God would have finished creating all these damaging forces, they would have also had a blessing. Then they would have the power to destroy the world. Therefore God made these damagers, these terrorists, these destructive forces, they're not complete. It's not a blessing of Shabbos. Deep broad, man. It's so deep. So, there is evil in the world. Let's translate it into our language. There's evil in the world. However, we should know, even though very, very terrifying, very frightening, when we come face to face with evil, and we have to think about evil, whether it's people going up World Trade Centers, or suicide bombers, and other, all kinds of evil that you come across in many, many ways. So we're frightened. So we think, God forbid, maybe these people, these evil forces, what he calls the Mazikin, they'll destroy the world. They have atomic weapons, not so that they can destroy the world. Maybe they'll destroy the world. So the difference is because they were created, Bein HaShemashah. God never finished creating them. Therefore, when Shabbos comes, Shabbos does not give them a blessing. Shabbos only gives a blessing when God finished their creation. But the Mazikin, he never finished creating. He made them incomplete. They don't have the Brach of Shabbos. The Brach of Shabbos is a Brach which is an eternal blessing. It means you're going to exist forever. So if evil would exist forever, God forbid, it could destroy the world. The world could turn totally evil. It would be horrendous. But since it doesn't get the blessing of Shabbos, which is the blessing of perfection, it will never be able to conquer the world. There will be evil, but evil and Mazikim will never conquer the world. They may come close, but they will never conquer the world, because they don't have the blessing of Shabbos. What will conquer the world is goodness, Because goodness was completely absurd. Because it says in the Pasuk, Re'alikim is called Shabbos, he made Tov Ma'od. So it's good, was finished before Shabbos. So the blessing of Tov, whatever is good in the world, gets the blessing of Shabbos. I have an eternal blessing. And therefore, ultimately, good will conquer evil. That's what the Hasidic idea is. So Shabbos is only chal, he says, once there's shlemus. And it's only chal on things which have a shlemus. The things which are pagum cannot have a bracha of Shabbos. That's why Hasidic people, some kind of mukubalim, do tshuva on Friday. And you go to the mikvah because you want to have this. You have to have the other shalom. You have to have a perfection in order for the bracha of Shabbos to be chal. So by doing tshuva on Friday, fix all the failings I had during the week. You go to the mikvah and come out a new person. And on my shalom, you have a shlemus, and then you get the bracha of Shabbos. Huh? With a little boy? Why not? Okay, so this is good. So now he says like this. It's also very important. Now he says, "Kinyan ze yesh lo menami the birchas Yisrael." Now we can also explain what's going on in the past. So you have the six blessings, and then it goes to the destruction of evil, and then there's the seventh blessing. So he says, first of all, Israel is the ultimate goal of creation. And now, the Torah is giving the Jew the ultimate complete blessing, the seventh blessing, which is the universal blessing, Kadosh Baruch Hu will bless you b'chol mishlach yadecha, whatever you do. So yech shas. So Tochil Gamaleim Bracha Mitzadna. Now once the blessing comes into Israel, it spreads throughout the world. Maybe this blessing will also go on the evil forces. The blessing of Israel will spread to other evil forces if they still exist. This is a very interesting concept. I'm going to bring it down to Al-Kain. It's a very important, interesting concept that Jews get a blessing, that blessing could spill over into enemies of Jews. Because through the Jews, the blessings go all over the world, so it gets into the wrong people too. Al-Kain, therefore, Higdum Lifnei HaBracha HaKlalit, before he mentions this general universal blessing for Israel, he mentions first, Yitzuach HaOidim HaMapalasha, that the enemies will be conquered and they will fall down. V'chein Yitzamim, this is true always, the Shabbos. On Shabbos, the Chulu Akim, all the evil forces run away Friday evening. They run away when they see Shabbos coming into the world. They disappear. Yehanam closes down to Shabbos. It doesn't exist. All evil, all punishment just runs away. Mitnei Kedushas Shabbos, there's a certain holiness of Shabbos, and Mitnei Tzetes beginning to sparkle the Tosefta Shabbos. Even before Shabbos, and you add a little bit on. And that's what happens, you get the bracha of Shabbos. You don't have any evil. It's a very, very deep problem of the time. A very deep problem of Hasidus and Kabbalah is that evil lives off the good. Evil sucks out of the good. Kochos hara, to use the Lashonos, a yonkin, they suckle from the Torah. So, we see it all the time. That Jews are wonderful people, and Jews have great midos and wonderful ideas and so on. And meanwhile, evil forces take the Jewish things and use it for evil. Whether it's, I say the Jews have the concept of the Beis HaMikdash on Yerushalayim, so come along the evil Arab terrorists, Arafat, and so on, and they steal the Beis HaMikdash concept and call it theirs, and then they get spiritual energy to fight and wreak havoc. The Jews brought to the world the concept of Mashiach, that the world will one day become a better place. So come along the Christians and steal the idea and twist it and turn it into crusades and who knows what, all the evil that they did because of their messianism. So many, many things. The Jews were along the concept of taking care of the unfortunate and the so on and the sick. So we have countries today which say, okay, if a person's sick, we'll kill him. Euthanasia. It all twisted. They take the goodness which are in the Torah and in Klai Yisrael, and the evil turns it, gets koach, gets energy from the good and uses it for evil. It's a very, very big problem. Most of our enemies, I would say almost every single one of our enemies, if you think about it, you see he has Jewish concepts in his agenda, but just twisted. And he says he can do it better than the Jew. The Jew, he says, failed, but my way of doing it is a better way, whether it's the Christians say, we have the New Testament, we're going to do God's will better than the Jews, or the Muslims, we're going to do God's will better than the Jews, we have a Quran, or even whatever, even the Nazis or the Soviets, they're going to create a messianic, they're going to build a better world. The Jews are ruining the world, we're going to make a better world because we have a different... So they take a Jewish idea and twist it. It's a very, very big problem. It's a major problem because we bring goodness into the world. Meanwhile, the evil forces, they suck from it. So we don't have the perfection. We don't have a protection to keep it good. It goes out the wrong way. Even Jews themselves sometimes will twist things. It's amazing when you see what Jews will do. They take a Jewish concept and twist it, and it turns into, unfortunately, evil. So... this is a big problem, because Shabbos brings the blessing into the world. Meanwhile, the Koach of Shabbos will give Koach to evil. So that's why there's something about Shabbos that chases evil away, even before Shabbos begins. We say in the Kagavna every Friday night, Achim and Nei, all the evil forces run away when they see Shabbos is coming. They just run away, so this bracha shouldn't go on them. So that's why it says in the Chumash, six special blessings, but then there's going to be this great universal seventh blessing. If it goes into the Jews, it might go into everybody else in the world. So Mashiach will come, but meanwhile there'll be all these Gaim and false ideas, and they'll also be there. So no, he says, before Mashiach will come, before you'll get the blessing, and everything you do, there'll be a destruction of the enemy. The destruction of the enemy is in order to prevent the enemy from taking this tremendous power of blessing and turning it into a tremendous power for evil. So it's a very interesting concept. In other words, why do we say that before Mashiach will come, or before it will be the ultimate level of Mashiach, there will be a Mechemes Gog Magog, there will be this tremendous war against the evil forces? You can't have evil forces exist in existing when tremendous blessing is coming into the world. They'll take that spiritual blessing and they'll twist it into much more greater evil. And we live in this today, I mean, I think that the Muslim fanatics are such a clear indication how you take holy ideas and you just turn it into such tremendous evil. It's just amazing. But you see with our own eyes, these people who are saying that they're giving their lives for God, meanwhile they're blowing up skyscrapers and they're killing their own. They go into mosques and blow up mosques and kill their own people because of this craziness, which they say is holy. It's a Jewish concept, but twisted. It's really a Jewish concept. Mashiach Nefesh Kiddush Hashem is Jewish. We're the ones who came up with that original idea. You give your life to God for a good cause. I mean, it's not Avraham Avinu and the Akedah, but look what happened. Look what the Muslims are doing with it. Look what the Christians do with it. So, it's like before the real Mashiach will have to come, there will have to be a destruction of the evil. Let the evil become so powerful because of the blessings coming into the world that they will destroy even with the goodness. So Hashem promises that. That's in this week. That's why the Passover, before it comes to the seventh unbelievable bracha, b'chol mishlach rebech, you get a blessing in everything you do, before that, the Ayvim has to be destroyed, in order to keep them away from the blessing. So I want to make this point, that if we have blessings, be very, very careful in terms of sharing these blessings with non-Jews and other faiths. Traditionally, the 2000, even before, the basic Jewish attitude towards the rest of the world is very, very suspicious and cautious. We don't share our precious blessings with everybody. Very, 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 and it's a very big problem nowadays that, especially in America, a lot of people, because of our modern society we're in, we think that we can share all of our secrets with the non-Jews. It's a very, very big problem because we're giving them tremendous spiritual energy when we do that. And it's a big danger because people can use that spirituality of the Jew against the Jew or against the world, which happened so many times in history. So be very careful with that. You know, just can't say, I'm a man of the spirit, and I'm a rabbi, I have my synagogue, and around the corner there's a conservative rabbi, and around the corner there's a reform rabbi, and there's a church, and there's a Episcopalian, and Catholic, and we all get together, we're all serving God, it's wonderful. Very dangerous, because we are sharing our spiritual blessings with people of other perspectives, and they get a lot of energy, which then they can use in the wrong way. So this Hasidus and Kabbalah is very concerned about this point. It's not so much to be found in Halacha or in regular straight Midrash, but in the Kabbalah and Hasidus, this is a very, very major problem, because the Kabbalah believes that evil has no energy of its own. God does not give it its own life force. Only through the good. The evil is a sickle, is some kind of a parasite, living off the good. And therefore, those of us who are privileged to have goodness have to be very careful about not letting it go over and spill over to support and to give life to evil. It's a very big deal. That's why Hasidim are very clannish. The real reason Hasidim are very clannish, very into themselves, this is the real reason, because of this. Not that any particular Hasid knows this, you know, but that is the Kabbalah who created that lifestyle. They were very concerned with that, so they said, you know, we're bringing a lot of Kedushah into our Hasidim. We're giving them a tremendous energy. We're opening up a lot of Kabbalah and a lot of Hasidus and a lot of spiritual powers are coming into the world through the power of the Rebbes and the Mekubalim. And what's going to happen? So we give it to our Jewish people, and they're in their naivete. We'll go invite the non-Jews and share to them. We have, unfortunately, the Kabbalah Center and the Madonna, who is the number one. So she goes in the morning to the Kabbalah Center, and at night she does her shtick on TV. So this is, man, is such a tremendous, such an expression of this idea where evil takes its koach from the good. You take Kabbalah and it winds up in Madonna. It's horrendous. It's not just what happened at the beginning of Christianity. Also, those people who say the Christian religion were Jews who were Mekubalim. There's a lot of Kabbalah in these Christianity. You see a lot of capitalistic notions in there. They were twisted. So we have to say, when they make Hasidus, the real letters, they said, we have to help teach our people to be very clannish, insular. We don't want them sharing things with the non-Jews, because we're afraid they give too much spirituality. They're very afraid of misuse of the kochos. Now, unfortunately, I think it's unfortunate that modern Orthodox are not aware of this whole side. We're not Mekubalim, and we're not Hasidim, so very naive, you know. You think that you can just make partnerships and open up everything and share everything, and that, you know, it's really very, it's unfortunate. It's not really smart. Yes? Yeah. Rabbi Soloveitchik was a very misunderstood person in this sense by his own community, by the modern Orthodox. He certainly was very, very traditional and had this very suspicious attitude and not to share really great secrets. And that's why he came out in that big issue of the Ecumenical Conference when the Pope John invited the Jewish people to join in the ecumenical movement. And he created the world of Christians. He wanted to be part of that. And he was an amazing, charismatic Pope. And he was so, at the surface, he was so nice to Jews and so friendly that many, many Jewish people were just they were just running to reconcile with the Catholic Church. And Otto Soloveitchik came out with that famous speech, I think called the Confrontation, that you cannot do that. You have separate, he called it separate spiritual paths, separate spiritual identity, and we should not confuse it, so we can't join the ecumenical. He kept the Orthodox, because without that, these modern Orthodox rabbis would have been first on line to have the audience with the Pope. And that was his thing, for sure. But the problem is, of course, he himself does, in his writings, deal with many of the other faiths and what they say and with language and everything is so universal, so people who read it think, oh, well, the rabbis know everything because, look, he's quoting this and he quotes that and he says this and he says that. But it's a tough thing. I mean, he was walking a very tight rope, trying to, in other words, we, our community, should be open to the world and be able to see what the world says and understand it and pick and choose for us, but not to send it back out into the world. That was what he is. No, it's a briska. It's two demons. So it's like having a one-way mirror where I can look to the outside, but they shouldn't look into me. That's what he wanted to create. He wanted to have a situation where me and you and everybody can read and see and integrate everything which is coming in from the outside, bring it into our realm and pick and choose the things which are told and have kedusha and can be makadesh the world through us, but not send it back out. He was not a person, it wasn't like Ralph Cook, who wanted to send things out into the world. The world was absolutely not interested in sending. I once had a very interesting discussion with him in the car about Jews and non-Jews, and basically, he basically told me that he should have nothing to do with other people at all, going out. It was completely against any kind of, completely against it. I mean, it was completely, only being things that not send anything out. Now, both Ralph Cook was very much in both in a two-way street. Rabbi Tzurevi was also very much a two-way street, you know. The Rabbi wasn't so much in bringing things in. He was just interested in sending things out, teaching them the seven mitzvos, starting to get
how did you change that in terms of
sending out the kedusha which they should have from us?
Right.
Reaching out to them.
So how can you say this kind of fear coming into the media?
I think the Babbage already in terms of this fear, well, I would say like this. Rav Cook didn't have the fear. I don't know, I have to read more about Rav Cook, but Rabavitcher Rebbe, they asked him a certain, he was trying to do things, I think, he was trying to get what is halachically correct. In other words, I think Rabavitcher Rebbe said, if halacha says you should do this, then it has to be correct, that's the Kabbalah too. Even though the Baba Shredi also knows Kabbalah and Kashidus, and he's also very sensitive to evil getting power from good. But if Halacha says that they should keep seven mitzvahs, and we know what the seven mitzvahs are, and they don't, we should teach it to them. And we don't have to worry about the fact that evil will get the power. He doesn't want, for example, Jews teaching crime other things outside the seven mitzvahs, Torah, things like that. He wouldn't want that. But he was very optimistic. They'll know what... Right. But they should have in this world, the seven mitzvahs, but not beyond that. Well, Baba Shirevi was a basic optimist. In general, I think he felt that if you do things what the halacha says, it'll take care of itself, despite all the worries that the Kabbalah and so on has. So Rav was, I think he was really afraid. He was very afraid of the Rav was coming from a very deep antipathy and very afraid. He was very afraid. I think the one word, fear, he was afraid of the gun. which is very fair what they would do. He just wanted, he very much respected what they accomplished, their wisdom and so on. We can learn from them. Chacham v'gayim tam, and we should learn from them. But he was very afraid of everything that they had done to Jews. I mean, he just did not trust them at all. Didn't trust them at any level at all. He once told me that when he walked by a church, he said, you know, even though I know so much Christianity, I've read so much, and I understand a lot where they're all coming from, and he knows the good things too. He says, well, I just can't help it. When I walk by a church, I get this sick feeling in my stomach, which is from my mother's milk. I can't take it. I can't take just being on the same block with the church. He was talking about such a... I had the same feeling. I grew up like that too, by the way. I still can't. I walk up and down St. Nicholas Avenue, and there's a church. There are two churches. I never look at it. I always look the other way. I've never seen the top of the church. I'm afraid there might be a cross. I might see a cross. I got very upset the other day. I drove to the Whitestone Bridge, and there's a cemetery on the left side, right before the Whitestone. Someone put up a huge cross. Very unusual for the United States, but a huge cross. And I said, boy, wow. And that, intellectually it's harmless, but it's just emotionally. A Jewish person, the old timers, like I grew up with the Hasidim and the Stiebel, the old timers can't stand looking at a church or a cross. Abba Dazar, just, you know, repulsive. I think last year a bunch of cardinals came into the Beis HaMikdash, right? So they wanted to understand, they said, about how the Beis HaMikdash system works. So there was a bunch of cardinals with big crosses. Had I been there, Tommy would have vomited. I tell you, not intellectually, just intellectually. They made it a sacred soul. So why? Oh, they bought a sacred soul from the Holocaust, maybe, right. And they left it to you. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Hasidim definitely have that today. Hasidim just came. It's a physical revulsion. It's just physically revolting. But when you see it, you have a feeling that there's tremendous evil over here, and I have to stay away from it. I can't give it any color at all. Okay. Good. Yes?
Let's say, this Kabbalah thing, does it work as a positive at all, or is it just immediately...
No, it's very bad. It's the fact that it gives out goodness. Absolutely. You can't say that the Christian world doesn't have a lot of goodness, which it got from the Torah. Tremendous.
Oh, so we should interpret all of our religions through the scope of whatever we gave them sometimes.
You can't say that, that's what he, as was quoted here, like a real Rambam writes that the development of Christianity and Islam, he says, from his point of view, was a good development. Even though they twisted part of the Torah and distorted it, but they brought so much good ideas from Torah to the savages in the world that it changed the world. It made them basically civilized into the Torah values. So he said it's definitely in the overall scheme of things, the Rambam writes, I have to consider it a positive, godly ordained. Because God wanted this to happen. It just didn't happen because of evil. It was a good part to that, and the good outweighed the evil, he says, and it was God's will that there should be a Christian religion, there should be an Islam religion, and brought the savages.
But the less beloved,
the he says that, the Rambam. So, definitely, the same thing is true, let's say, this Kabbalah Center. I'm sure a lot of people are getting a lot of good things out of the Kabbalah Center. However, I'm absolutely also sure that in the long run, there's going to be a force for evil.
Is it a center where they actually teach Kabbalah, or is it a center where they teach Makar people?
No,
under the title of Kabbalah.
They do kill the Makar Jews, the Makar of Zion. And they teach Kabbalah. That's also a sham. Well, it's a big money. It's a big money. They make a lot of money for the people on top are making a lot of money.
They're looking to have to buy a part of culture that's led by it. It's just look at it.
They shall holy water that the Rebbe can't touch. So there's a lot of money, which is right away you see the evil side, right on the financial side. But I met different followers of it, Jews who are very sincere and share the religion. Not Judaism, it's just like someone used to make a joke on the Rusish about different people in Judaism. It's a very religious and their religion, you should say. It's a very religious, but it's Torah's not, but very religious, they're very strong. So we could say about the Kabbalah Center, it's there very strong, but it's a different religion, it's not Torah. But it comes out of Torah. I don't think that what the problem you have in these past few is that you can't see the evil right away many times. Right? Many times at the beginning it looks so good.
So when the people themselves feel tangible,
at some point the people themselves should be touching the evil.
Yeah.
I had a situation with this Kabbalah Center where a girl that I've been very involved in being a character. Started off with a wonderful story, but started with a guy, just about 30 years ago, a guy in YU wants to kill. She put an ad into the Village Voice. And he said, anyone who wants to have Shabbat, call this number. So this girl called up. She was hanging around in the village in the early 70s. And, you know, she was a girl, her father was a Jew who had apostate. He had converted to Christianity and he became a priest. So her father was a Jewish priest. Her mother was a drunk, frustrated actress. Her mother wanted to be an actress on Broadway, never got a job. Whatever, I don't know, she got a big part here and there, she turned into an alcoholic. And this girl was a very beautiful girl and she was also very spiritual. And she had a feeling that I couldn't take sin. I couldn't take my father, the priest. She hated him. And I think he divorced her mother. Her mother was an alcoholic, so she didn't have much to do with her. And she just said, I want to be Jewish. So she used to go out. She was in the village. And she used to go to Israeli nights. Wherever there was an Israeli performer performing in the village, so she would go there. Of course, Israel was a big thing. So she got involved with all these Israeli singers, the low lives, you know. And that's Tzaddikim, these guys. And that they have Jewish names and they sing Israeli songs, but they're far from being Tzaddikim. No one there really was a Tzaddik. So she was with them. So this guy from YU put the ad into the Voice. Whoever wants Shabbat, call. So she calls. And the guy came to me, says, Rabbi Reichman, and I got a bunch of calls. And he said, Rabbi Reichman, this girl wants to have Shabbat. Maybe you could be her host for Shabbat. I say, good, okay. So they set her up in the neighborhood, not by me. And she started to come to Shabbos. So she came a few times. And I really couldn't tell much about the Israeli singers because that was the whole Judaism was that. And what was the alternative? The priest, the mishmar, or the alcoholic. So she starts to come. And, you know, it's going on really for a few years. And all of them become more and more religious. And she started to keep kosher and starts to keep Shabbos. Well, really, starts to make a lot of things. And then like this, she says she wants to match. She fell in love with an Israeli guy, of course. And she wants to marry him. She met him in the club. Well, this guy was not a singer, but they met in the club. So she wasn't yet really fully religious. So I think if she wants me, I should be Masada Kedushin. Because I'm the only rabbi she knows. I should be the Masada Kedushin. I figure, you know, based upon where she's coming from, where she's at, this was a Yeshua. So I said, okay, I spoke to the guy. He was not from me. He's an Israeli boy. He finished the army, came here, nice guy. And he had like a little store, you know, like an electronic store. So it seems a little stable. One of these things that is in his voice. He's like a stable guy. So I said, okay. So I was in the Sada tradition, and they were married for 3-4 years, and then at the end of 4 years he got tired of being married, he wants to move on. You know, this Israeli secular guy. So she discovered and tells us, and I have another girlfriend already, it's about time we should stop, you know, get divorced, he has no time for anymore. So I ran as quickly as I could to him. I said, you got to give this girl a get. Because I married you. I got to make sure this thing ends the right way. So he was very nice about it. He said, okay, sure, whatever you want to drive, I'll do it. And she was agreed. So then we got a get. As fast as I could, I got a closer get. So she said, it's fine. I figured, okay, first marriage. She married, he's a Jewish guy. And he wasn't a bad boy. And after 4 years, he got tired. So fine. Maybe, but meanwhile, she was kept up over the 4 years, and she's becoming more and more. So maybe now, the next time we talk together, she might have shown the Shabbos. Because she's a very pretty girl, and a very nice person. I'm pretty sure that she would marry again. Maybe the next time we get to the Shalom Shabbos. A very independent girl, so I couldn't really do that much directly. I just worked with her slowly, indirectly. So, after a year or so, she says, Rabbi Reichman, I have a boyfriend, I want you to meet him. I said, okay, good. And then she says, he's about tshuva. I said, great. And he's an Israeli, because this girl was enamored of Israelis. I was the only Israeli. An Israeli for her, and about tshuva for me. So I said, okay, great. So let's meet him. So she says, he's in the Kabbalah Center. His Rebbe is the Rebbe of the Kabbalah Center. And I said, okay, fine, I'll come from the Shabbos. So he made a little malacca, a guy came over, he was wearing his white knitted yarmulke, and he was wearing white from Shabbos, white shirt, white pants, and everything was white. And I said, okay, and it's Shabbos time. And then after a few weeks, she announces, and he says, you know, we're engaged. Absolutely not. No idea where it was. I figured it's a research center in Queens, and they do Kabbalah, so it's okay. So that's their stick. And it's fine. But the Israelis, it's good. So then they're engaged. And then she starts telling me she's having problems. I said, what are your problems? She says, the Rebbe wants her to quit her job. She was a secretary in the United Nations. She was working for someone, it was a good job, nice pay, tremendous benefits. She had been a long way, by the way, the personal secretary for Sheldon Sokol for about 2 years along the way. She was a top secretary. She could type like 1,000 words a minute. I don't know what she was doing, but she could do a lot. She was a great secretary. So she's there in the UN, and the Rebbe says, to her fiancé, she had to quit her job. I said, why? Why do you want you to quit the job? Well, we're going to get married in a few months, and we're going to be moving in to the house. The Rebbe owns a house. In the house, he has rooms, and each room is a different couple. So what does that do with your job? I said, okay, you'll save rent. You live by the Rebbe in the house. Well, what does that have to do with your job? She said, because the Rebbe has a job for me. I said, what's the job? My job is to go to 42nd Street to stand by the Port Authority and to sell the Rebbe's books. There's a table there. I'll be selling books, and my husband will be selling books. And I say, really? And what's going to happen with the money from the book sales? Well, that goes into the Rebbe. We give it to the Rebbe. And then he gives back to us food and living in the house. I said, really? Wow. But this doesn't sound so close to me. This sounds like a cult. We have a guy in town who's taking the people to work for him and setting them up. I said, I don't think you should quit your job. I said, don't quit the job. Just see, you know, see what you can do without quitting the job. So she was very loyal to me because we were already 5-6 years that we knew one another and she's coming. And by now she already became a Shalom Shabbos. So she didn't quit the job. And she gets so much pressure from her fiancé every time they're going out. I mean, you gotta quit that job. The Rebbe, and the Rebbetzin also involved, not just the Rebbe's wife. Rebbetzin is all angry that you don't want to quit your job, you don't want to do what we do, you're not part of the chevra, whatever they call themselves, you're not part of the club. It's no good. So then I said to her, so you don't quit the job. I found a get nice. I said, this doesn't sound good. It sounds like a stick of pulp. And I tell her again, it sounds like a pulp to me. I don't know what it is. So then she says, they're having a tznayim. You make a tznayim. I should come to the tznayim. I said, okay, where's the tznayim? In the Rebbe's, in the steeple of the house, whatever you call it. Say, good. The temple, whatever they call it. Wait, it's the bayis. Good. So when is it? Matzah Shabbos. So I come down, Matzah Shabbos, my wife. She's so happy you were coming, and this is great, the tznayim. I come in, this is beautiful. No, I just came to the Rebbe Shabbos. I come in there into this big room with the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin and all the Hasidim and the Hasidot sitting in different places. And everybody is dressed totally white. From head to toe. From the white yarmulke, white shirt, white pants, white socks, white shoes. Everything is white. White belt, everything. Everything is totally white. Ooh. Think to myself, wow, this is really holy, very, very honest, white, honest like a malach. And then the Rebbe says this or that, and then the Machabit me, I should give a drasha, so I gave a whole Kabbalistic thing, because there is no Kabbalah, so he said Kabbalah. Okay, fine. Whatever I said, I don't remember the time, but she said to me later, everybody was so impressed that the rabbi from outside could say Kabbalah and it sounded so good. Then,
like, what is this?
I don't know what's going on. No, that's just Naim, just to make the final decision. Going on. This is the head of the whole Kabbalah Center, this guy. Yeah. So anyway. So then during this whole thing with Tznayim, there's this piece of paper that you sign. So want to honor me, he says, the rabbi says he wants to honor me. Actually, you're one of the signatories on this thing.
Yeah.
Well, no, traditionally it was done really early. Right, big deal. So, okay, anyway, they had a whole ceremony, I don't know, with 7 dishes, and lechayims, and white wine, and blue wine, and red wine, you know, all this Kabbalistic. And finally, he kept aside a piece of paper, so he says, he wants to honor me, since I'm a rab, so I'm the rabbi, but I'm also a rab, I should be a witness. Give me a document, and I see that the date of the document is not the United States, but it's something, I don't know, like a week earlier. So I say to the rabbi, I'm not allowed to, I can't, you know, the Mechilas Kavod, Halasha, Harama, I apologize, I cannot sign a document because it says in the Mishnah, the Gemara, Halacha, that a witness has to make sure the date is the correct date. If it's predated, you're not allowed to sign a predated document. I don't know why it was predated, but whatever the reason was. So he says to me, he says, it's not important. Yeah. Anyway, it's just a ceremony. It's not real. So I said, I'm very sorry, because signing a document is a legal thing, a halachic thing. And to me, it's not just a ceremony, it's something very real. So I apologize, I can't sign. I was furious. And he gave it to someone else to sign. So the other people signed, I didn't sign. Then he went home, and I told the rabbi, and I said, listen, if a rabbi, is telling another rabbi to do something which is halakhically wrong, then I'm suspecting that there's something wrong here in this. It's not just the question of your job and sort of cult type living, but even the halacha is not being kept for it. So, I mean, if he dated tonight, he's not the biggest problem in the world, so, but still, it's not right to do such a thing. But I'm trying to suspect that there's something here that's really not the way it's supposed to be. So then, a few weeks later, she tells me a new thing. I said, you have to be very cautious now. I said, that princess is going to be really cautious. She tells me a few weeks later, the following. She's marrying this guy. He's about to run from the center. However, the Rebbe wants him to get married here in New York. And get to work right away at Port Authority. Move in and move in about work. But meanwhile, his parents and his family cannot come because they're Israelis. They can't get on a plane and come here. They're 25, 50 relatives, brothers, sisters. No, it's a Pusazi thing, big family. So the rabbi told them, we're going to have two weddings. We're going to make a wedding in New York. You guys will move into the house. And set up for you, get to work. That was going to be in February. And in June, we'll go to Israel and we'll make another wedding in Israel for his family. I said to her, I said, this is the first thing I ever heard of having two marriages. Same people should get married twice. She said, yeah, so I said, well, go speak to him. Ask him if this is real or what does he mean? So she went to speak to the Rebbitzin. She doesn't speak to the Rebbe, she doesn't speak to the women. The Rebbitzin does. She spoke to the Rebbitzin. And the Rebbitzin says, yeah, it's going to be. She says, no, of course. She says, of course, the real wedding is here. That's just a mock wedding that we're going to do in Israel, a make believe wedding. So I told her to ask this question, how are you going to make it? The Rebbe's going to come and make this wedding over there with you. Make the wedding. So I'm supposed to ask if you're going to say all the blessings, like Baruch HaTashem, Lekeinu Melech HaOlam, Yotzah HaAdam, Baruch HaTashem, Melech HaOlam, Asher Pravus, Rosh HaSimcha, all these things. So the Rebbe, he says, yeah, that's, you know, it's a mark to make for these weddings, and he says the blessings. So she came, she tells me the story. I said, you have to break the engagement. You can't get into this. Two weddings, Rosh HaSimcha, whatever he's saying, because, you know, it's just to make believe, to make the family feel good, whatever. I said, it's a different religion. It looks like Torah, but the yarmulkes will have big tzitzis, and the tzitzis is outside, and they daven long davening, and they sing beautiful shmiros, all of this is true. So they're very religious in their religion, but Judaism, halach Judaism, is not, because we will never make two weddings. You will never make bracha the second time and make believe. The whole thing, I said, is just. And so she did. She broke the engagement. Yes, she did. And then, and she was about to break the engagement. She tells me, Rabbi Reichman, I'm very afraid. I said, why are you so afraid? Now, it turns out this girl has ESP. You know, ESP, extrasensory. She has extrasensory perception, ESP. She can predict what will happen to you, and she's right about 50% of the time. I know, for 10 years, she's telling me, for 10 years, you're going to get this job, you're going to lose that job, your son is going to do this, your boy's going to do that, people like your son, don't like your daughter, all these things, all the time. And she's right about 50% of the time. She has a co-op. Ramban writes in Chumash that some people have this co-op. I mean, Ramban says it's a different thing. And I always thought that she is. My wife believes some more than I do. My wife thought, oh, she said this yesterday, she said that. I said, don't tell me, I'm not interested in what she said. So, no, I could use her back with our own Kabbalah. So she tells me, she says, Rabbi Reichman, I'm very afraid. You break the engagement, I'm very afraid. I say, why are you so afraid? She says, you should know, I've been involved with the center for now for about 5 months or so. You should know that the Rebbe, but especially the Rebbitzin, even more than the Rebbe, have evil power. And as I have ESP, they have a double dose of ESP. And other powers, you see, she calls it witchcraft. She says it's witchcraft over there. It's tissue. And I'm very afraid if I cross them, They will curse me and you, because they'll blame you. They know you're my rabbi. And more than me, she says, I have EFT, and now I'll do my thing. She had other spooky people that she knew that she used to go to. So outside, I use my people, but she said, I'm very safe for you. She's a nice person. I'm very safe for you, for your wife, your children. These people will use the powers of evil to really hurt you.
I have Torah and God. I told my dear friend,
I said, listen, I have Rambam. I will Rambam with the Rav's Torah, and I'd say that any Mechashefa, I don't care what their powers are, the Rambam and this and the Rav stands against it, will blow them away. I don't care. Don't be afraid. Just break the engagement. So she broke it. Nothing ever happened to her. Nothing ever happened to me. A few years later, she married Gerd Sedek, a guy with the Geyer. No, an American, regular American, good guy, 100% strong. They're married now for about 15 years. Wonderful marriage. And they're living happily ever after. So that's my experience with this Kabbalah. The inside.
Wow.
This is the inside experience.
I'll leave with the Shira Kabbalah this year.
Okay. So the Shemesh Shmuel says, you know, you have these berries right here with Tov and Zofa, that the evil side doesn't get the Yemika doesn't get the Kamah.
So
it's
Brisk
Zolomon. What? Brisk is, yeah, no question. Plain halacha can easily beat Kishu. Okay. Ready to start.